The Tom Woods Show, episode 1044.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Friends, my Away carry-on helps make my travel a pleasure. It's super strong yet lightweight, and it's even got its own USB charger built in. I'm like the king of the airport with this thing. Take $20 off your suitcase order when you head to awaytravel.com/woods and use promo code Woods at checkout. Hello, everybody. Tom Woods here, joined once again by Congressman John Duncan of Tennessee, who has been a member of Congress for 30 years and who is the last remaining Republican in Congress to have voted against the war in Iraq. And he's out with a brand new article on the Pentagon and its budget. And I thought that is just singing out of my hymn book. So let's get him back on to talk about that. Congressman Duncan, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Tom. It's an honor to be back with you again.
I really, really like your article. I want to talk about it in a minute, but I'm very sad to know that this is probably the last time we'll speak with you as a member of Congress.
Well, I've got nine little grandchildren all here in Knoxville, and I think my family needs me maybe more than my country does at this time. I want to spend a little time, little family time, and I've missed a lot of things with my own. You know, I have four grown children, but I missed a lot of things when they were growing up. And so at the end of this term, it will be 30 years in the Congress, and that's probably enough. Although I'm certainly still going to be very interested in national and international issues, and hopefully maybe we'll write some more articles.
Well, sure. And of course, I understand that the schedule of a congressman is harrowing because not only are you away from home for a long time being in Washington, but also when you are home, there's so much constituent work to do and, in effect, campaigning for the next run. It must be exhausting. I don't know how somebody does that for 30 years.
Well, I'll tell you, it's, you know, most of us work harder at home than we do when we're in Washington because I've always felt very lucky to have my job. But in this job, you get to work nights and weekends and holidays. And I have one of those, you know, it's not like a big city district where you cross the street and you're in a different district and you're lucky if half the people know who the congressman is, or a very rural district where the lines have been changed many times over the years. In this district, I'm sure there's several thousand people would be glad if I dropped dead today, but they do know the name Duncan. And so we get an awful lot of invitations. And I tell people I've got 780,000 bosses, and it's growing every day because Knoxville is one of the most popular places to move to in the whole country. People all over the country are moving from the high tax states to the low tax states.
Oh, makes sense. Makes sense. Now, are you anywhere near where Glenn Jacobs is?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. In fact, he's a friend of mine. I've eaten with him, and I have two sons who are big wrestling fans. So I've been to some wrestling matches over the years, more so when they were little, but they're grown. One is 31 and one's 36, and much to my surprise, they're still big wrestling fans and big fans of Kane. But, you know, I mentioned a minute ago that people are moving from the high tax states to the low tax states. The most dramatic way that I can show that, New York had 41 congressmen in the 1970s. Now they've got 27. And somebody told me a couple of months ago they're probably going to go to 25 or 24 in the next Congress. It's really dramatic. That's what's been happening all over the Northeast and the Midwest. In fact, when Flint, Michigan was having all those water problems, it was in large part because they'd lost almost half their population since the 1970s.
Let's switch gears, talk a bit about your article. I'm going to have a link to it up at tomwoods.com/1044, which is our episode number. And you talking here about, you say, on November 14th, the House passed what one Capitol Hill paper described as a $700 billion compromise defense bill. It was $80 billion over the budget caps and many billions more than even President Trump had requested. Is there a part of you that thinks that more than not, the military budget is a racket?
Well, I said in this article that I've wondered several times over the years where there's any fiscal conservatives at the Pentagon, because when it comes to money, the Defense Department is just a gigantic bureaucracy that says more, more, more. And one of the main points of this article was that it's very false to think that the Defense Department has been cut drastically or depleted or eviscerated or whatever, as we've heard so many times over the last few years, because the $700 billion is not the entire amount that the Defense Department gets. The military construction bill is a different bill. And then they also get extra amounts in most of the emergency and supplemental appropriations bills. For instance, the flooding bills and various others. And then the omnibus bill at the end of the year, which we do every time, usually contains even more for the Defense Department.
It's quite something. You're right, because I'm looking in your article. The statistics are pretty telling. I mean, Defense Department appropriations more than doubling since 2000, emergency and supplemental appropriation bills, then money spent every single year on new equipment and tanks and everything. And most of this is stuff that doesn't wear out after 1 year. And then you point out that you say it's ironic that the only president in the last 60 or 70 years who's tried to rein in defense spending is the only president in that period who spent most of his career in the military. And who would that be?
Well, that was Dwight Eisenhower. I read a book a couple of years ago called Ike's Bluff about Eisenhower's foreign policy. And it says, at one point in that book, it says that he told his top staffer, when his staffer told him he couldn't cut the military, he said if he gave every general who would cut his budget an extra star, he said you'd have to get out of the way of the rush. And he said, heaven help me if we ever have a president who doesn't know as much about the military as I do. And of course, his most famous speech was his farewell address about the military-industrial complex. And I think I've said before that I think Eisenhower would be shocked by how far we've gone down that road that he warned us against. And I'll say this, I think national defense is probably one of the most legitimate functions of the federal government. And I actually served in the military, and I'm not a pacifist, but it's ridiculous how we've gone overboard in this way over the last many years.
It's interesting that the New York Times, which you quote in here, had an editorial last month called America's Forever Wars, talking about the U.S. being at war continuously since the attacks of 9/11. Well, that's very sweet and kind of them to point that out, but they themselves played no small role in propagandizing for precisely this outcome.
Well, that's true, and I said in my article that it's almost a huge understatement to say that I very seldom agree with the New York Times editorial board, but when they wrote this editorial about America's Forever Wars, and it says they said in the editorial that the U.S. now has troops in at least 172 countries, and it said the American people seem to have accepted all this militarism so far, but it's a very real question whether, in addition to endorsing these commitments, which have cost trillions of dollars and many lives over 16 years, whether or not they will embrace new entanglements. And of course, as I pointed out on an earlier program with you, I'm the only Republican left in the Congress now that voted against going to war in Iraq, and I certainly would do that all over again. I told you once before, and I've said it before, that while that was probably the most unpopular vote I ever cast in my district for 3 or 4 years, it slowly became probably the most popular vote I've ever cast.
On the other hand, the folks who are in the interventionist camp, they speak at well-funded conferences. There's money flowing like crazy. There's donations coming into them. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of money in being a non-interventionist.
Well, there's not, and I think you're very accurate in saying that really most of this is more about money than it is about any real threat to this country. And I think it's very sad, particularly when you consider that we're over $20 trillion in debt, And two or three weeks ago, they reported that the deficit for this past fiscal year, which just ended, was $666 billion. And next year, it may be even higher. It's really sad what we're doing to this country. And as I pointed out in that article, in the last fiscal year, in fiscal 2016, we spent $177.5 billion on new equipment. And we do that every year. And yet we hear we hear on the news that the equipment is outdated or everything's old. Well, everything is not old. And they're just loaded with all kinds of new equipment. And I want our military to be well equipped, but you can go ridiculously overboard on anything. And I think that's pretty much what we've done. In fact, I said in this article, I said, I think public relations students and professors in future years should study how in the world the Pentagon has been able to convince most of the people in the country that they've been cut drastically at the same time that they're getting more money than ever before.
Yeah, you know, in a way, it's obviously at a much larger scale, but I can think of the education bureaucracy, I think, is the same way. There are really no cuts to education, so-called. That money, that goes up every single year. But the impression is given that if they don't have that bake sale, they're that close to just going under or something. And it's not so. The numbers go up and up and up, and the results get worse and worse. Education and the military being very similar in that respect. More with Congressman Duncan after we thank our sponsor. Folks, it's time to start thinking about gifts, and I, as always, am here to help you. As you know, I am a huge fan of my Away carry-on, which I use whenever I travel. They've got two sizes of carry-ons and three sizes of larger suitcases with 10 colors to choose from. But more important than the appearance is how sturdy and reliable the suitcase is, how lightweight it is at the same time, and the fact that it can charge my cell phone or tablet or e-reader or anything else powered by a USB cord. If you're an overpacker like me, the interior's got a great compression system, plus a removable, washable laundry bag inside that keeps your clean clothes away from your dirty clothes. Well, Away bags and accessories make the perfect gift with their lifetime guarantee and 100-day trial. So there's a perfect size and color for everyone on your list this holiday season. Or grab an Away gift card if you can't make up your mind. Take 20 smackers off a suitcase when you go to awaytravel.com/woods and use promo code WOODS at checkout. That's awaytravel.com/woods and use promo code WOODS at checkout. Congressman, also in your article, you say we have too many officers, too many military officers. What do you mean by that?
Well, I said in this article, I'd read in Scott Berg's biography of Woodrow Wilson, he said that in World War I, we had 30 enlisted members for each one officer. And then I remember reading several years ago that Dwight Eisenhower, once again quoting him, and that he said we had too many officers when we had 9 enlisted for each officer. And today we have 4.5 to 5.5 enlisted for each officer. And so this is very expensive, both in regard to active duty and in retirement. I remember several years ago, I ask how many retired admirals and generals there were, and there were almost 8,000 at that point. It's probably even more now. And at the same time, I think there were a little over 400 retired members of Congress. But we have too many officers, and I think that helps advance the fact that we will have troops based in all these, in almost every country in the world. And I think it makes us more likely to get into all these little wars all around the world. I mean, you know, when it came out a few months ago that we had 1,000 troops in Niger, almost nobody in the Congress even knew that they were there.
What's your relationship with the GOP been like since that fateful vote in 2003?
Well, I get along personally with almost everybody in the Congress, but obviously my position on this is very much in a minority, although I think that it's becoming more and more a majority feeling among the populace all across the country. I wrote an article for the American Conservative magazine, I think in 2015, in which I said that at one point the Republican Party was the peace party in this country. And I was speaking to at that point I was speaking at the Willard Hotel in downtown Washington to 200 executives from the Los Angeles Chamber of Commerce. And I said in that speech, I said that we're long past the time when we should stop trying to run the whole world, and we should start putting our own country and our own people first once again. And I was very surprised. I had said that in speeches around the country and in my district to middle and lower income groups, and was always interrupted by applause. Well, I was surprised, though, that this very upper income group that I was speaking to also interrupted by those comments by or that part of my speech by applause. And I think it was sort of a forerunner of the platform that President Trump later ran on.
Where do you see the GOP in 2020 when it comes time for, well, I guess 2019, you'd have a presidential election coming up. The GOP seems very divided, although, of course, these days the Democrats are divided to the progressive insurgents versus the Hillary establishment, and then there's some other divisions. But what do you see coming out of all this for the Republicans?
Well, I think that the Republicans will be all right if we can pass some of these things, if we can pass the tax cut, and also if we would start following the platform or the views that President Trump ran on, which are sort of the America First type platform. I think that's very appealing to most people. If we continue to be the hawkish interventionist party, then I think we will have trouble. And, you know, you mentioned that that comment I had in the article about too many officers, and I, you know, that came from that biography on Woodrow Wilson. But I will tell you the most interesting thing, these little wars seem to foster other wars. And I was very interested in that same book on Woodrow Wilson. You know, Winston Churchill told William Griffin, a New York newspaper editor in 1936, he said, America should have minded its own business and stayed out of the World War. He was talking about World War I. And Churchill said, if you hadn't entered the war, the Allies would have made peace with Germany in the spring of 1917. Had we made peace, then there would have been no collapse in Russia followed by communism, no breakdown in Italy followed by fascism, and Germany would not have enthroned Nazism. And that's a quote from Winston Churchill. So I think that was very surprising, but I think that in many ways, the foreign policies that we followed over the last few years have created more enemies for this country than they have friends, especially in the Middle East.
That is interesting about Churchill saying that, because that is the standard view that the non-interventionists have, to go to show that simply because you have good intentions, why we need to get rid of this German regime, is not really enough, because there are a lot of consequences to that. You may find yourself pining for that regime someday when you realize that in this world, you're often faced with a choice of bad versus worse, as opposed to bad versus good. But you know what? I wonder, certainly with the Middle East stuff today, it seems like the people waging these wars have got to have their own private agenda. It can't be that they just can't see. Can it really be that they simply are blind to the fact that if you knock out Iraq, you by default strengthen Iran? I mean, are they really that dim that they couldn't see that? If they had taken one half of a Middle East course, they would have seen that you're just going to empower the Shiites, who will just cleanse the Sunnis, and then you're going to strengthen Iran. I mean, is it really a matter of stupidity, or do they have some agenda other than their stated one? How do you make sense of all this?
Well, I don't know. I don't think it's stupidity, but I think it's just almost humanly impossible for the neocons to admit that they've been just totally wrong in all their foreign policy views that they've advocated over the last few years, that everything they've supported just about has gone badly or has been proven to be among the biggest foreign policy mistakes that we've made in the history of this country. I'd almost like to see what Bill Kristol would say if I read that same quote from Churchill to him or the neocons at the Weekly Standard, because they seem to hold Churchill up as a model, and that quote that I had goes totally against everything that they've advocated over the last few years.
So with you retiring, who's going to replace you? Are they having an election? What's going on?
Well, there are several people running for my seat now, and so that's it's still sort of up in the air. But there are of course friends of mine in the Congress. Walter Jones is running for re-election, and Thomas Massey and Justin Amash, and there's a few others. Morgan Griffith from Southwest Virginia has voted with us on several things, and Mark Sanford of South Carolina votes with us a lot of the time, and there are others, and I think it's a view that's becoming slowly becoming more acceptable and popular in the Republican Party. Although I will tell you this, I've been fiscally conservative about almost everything, not just defense, and you talk about my standing in the party. In my first 6 years in office, we were in the minority, and almost all the Republicans voted the same way that I was voting. Then we took control, and I kept voting against these big spending bills. And Tom DeLay, at that point, was more powerful than the Speaker. And he came to me one time, and he told me, he said, "But these are Republican bills now." And I said, "Yes, Tom, but you're spending more money than the Democrats were spending." I will give him credit in that the Democrats were still attacking for not spending even more. But I think we very much disappointed our base by not holding down spending when we had the White House and the Congress.
Doesn't it feel like President Trump had the ability, because of his independence and his maverick streak and all that, he doesn't owe anything to anybody, could have been the guy, in theory, to stand up and say, you know what, and he can speak to the Republican masses, a lot of them, and say, this really, you know what, this is really not helping us, all this intervention. It's just draining resources that you and I both know we obviously need here. And even if he wanted to say, to the people who say we have to fight them over there so they don't come here, he could even reach them by saying, well, what do you think's easier, transforming their entire societies or just building a wall? You know, I mean, if you want to keep them from getting here, that would seem to be a lot easier. At least he could speak to them that way. He could make them think in a new way. And instead, for the most part, since he's gotten in power, he's got them thinking in the same old ways.
Well, I think and I hope that President Trump's heart is in the right place. And many things that he said over the years are things that I'm very much in agreement with him on, and I still have hopes for him. I think that because he's been in business, I don't think he's followed some of these issues as closely as I have, and I think he probably really believes that, for instance, that the Defense Department has been greatly cut and so forth. But I do think that he wants to try to broker some type of peace in the Middle East. You know, I don't think he's particularly anxious to, or not nearly as anxious as some of our leaders have been in the past few years to get us into another war of some sort.
That's true. That's true. Although the posture toward Iran is not that helpful, and the obsequiousness towards Saudi Arabia seems altogether unnecessary, even if you want to maintain decent relations with them. But of course, if he surrounds himself with generals, how can he be surprised that he gets advice that, hey, we need more equipment? I mean, that's the way it goes, right? If I surround myself with elementary school teachers, I'm going to hear sob stories about how they don't have chalk and erasers.
Well, that's true. And I've been a little bit concerned that he had too many generals running the show. I'm in a different spot on Iran than he is also, because, you know, all the Iran has fully complied with and done everything they were supposed to do. And I voted against some of these additional sanctions on Iran because I said, well, in fact, I was on NPR one weekend and they asked me about that because I was one of three people that voted not to add additional sanctions to Iran. And I said, well, I didn't think we should slap them in the face at the time they're doing everything that we ask or demanded that they do.
Well, Congressman, now that you are on your way to retirement, as you say, you hope that we'll still see more articles from you. What's the most common outlet for you? Is it the American Conservative?
Well, I hope so. The American Conservative, though, wanted to change. I submitted this article to them first, and they wanted to change several things there. So I had a friendly, disagreement with them. But I still like the American Conservative. I've written for Chronicles. I've written for a lot of publications. I've written for some of the Capitol Hill newspapers, and I'm leaving the Congress, but I'm not. I really am not. I'm hoping that I'm not going to be retired. I'm just going to continue to speak out on some of the issues. And then, in addition to that, Lincoln Memorial University a few years ago was kind enough to name a law school. It's law school after me, and I think maybe they want me to maybe teach a course or two at that law school. So I'm going to keep on trying to do a lot of different things, but certainly push these views that I expressed in this article in every way possible. But you know, when I first came to Congress, our national debt was slightly less than $3 trillion. And I thought that was terrible. And now we're up to over $20 trillion and going higher all the time. So,
well, let me tell you something, Congressman. I mean, I know you know this already, but it needs to be repeated. The fact that you, as a Republican, stood up against this war at a time when it was extremely unpopular, especially among Republicans, to do so, was very, very important for a lot of reasons, not least of which is that it made clear that you don't have to be a commie to be anti-war. And in fact, the commies are totally opportunistic when it comes to war anyway. It's not like communist regimes were particularly hesitant about using military force. So you help to show that there's a coherent way of looking at the world that involves a respect for free markets and for peace and non-intervention. And that there are precious few voices like that, and every one of them is a true gem. And so we're grateful for what you did. And thank you very much for that and for your time with me today.
Well, thank you, Tom. I certainly appreciate the work that you do, and I enjoy listening to your podcast all the time. You have a real interesting variety of people on there, and I just wish that more and more people were listening, and I'm sure that you have a great many listeners all across the country. So it's a real honor for me to be on here with you again.
Very kind, Congressman. Thanks again. All right, everybody, that is going to do it for today. The show notes page will have the article on it. So if you want to read it, check out tomwoods.com/1044. I'll have episodes on Thanksgiving and Black Friday, if you can believe that. Don't forget the big discount on the Master Lifetime Membership at libertyclassroom.com. That is the time of year to get it. So check it out on Black Friday. That's November 24th, 2017. Check that baby out, libertyclassroom.com. Put it on your Google Calendar to remind you. And I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.